Welcome to All the Best. I'm Merin Winchester. This episode, we're bringing you tales of love from remote or strange locations. Plus, we get inside the head of poet Miles Merrill. Our first story was produced by Sarah Lowe, who decided she wanted to find out a little more about a strange date her mum went on.
There are some stories in your family that you just always know and don't think to question. One of these in my family recently struck me as unusual. I went to the source to ask my mum about a date she went on with a boy called Brian in her hometown of Vancouver, Canada. Testing, testing. Okay, mum.
Hello, Sarah.
Now, can you tell me about your date with Brian?
You see this guy, this guy's in love with you. Yes, I'm in love. Who looks at you the way
my sister and I would go to the ice rink a lot to, you know, meet boys. And I remember, yeah, it must have been at the ice rink that he asked me out. I'm pretty sure that was before I met your father. I really liked his parents. His parents were really, really nice people, and he was okay. But when I went to his house, I actually did enjoy talking to them, and that was unusual because how often do you really enjoy the parents?
How did he first ask you out?
He just said that we were going out, and it was a rainy Saturday afternoon, and I was quite thrilled, you know, because he had a car, because our family didn't have a car, and he was going to pick me up, and he was going to take me on a date, and, you know, just casual, and he told me that, just be casual, just
But you didn't know where you were going?
Oh, no. Oh, no. It was all ahead of me. So, yeah, so he came and picked me up, and away we went. And I thought, as we drove along and got closer, I thought, boy, I think this is, you know, the tip. I asked him and he said, yeah, it was the tip and we were going to shoot rats.
Was it an event that the tip facilitated? You could come and, like bowling, like you could hire a gun and go into the tip to shoot rats? Or was this something he just did?
Well, no, I don't know if you're really allowed to, but there didn't seem to be anybody policing it. Didn't seem to be a problem.
Were you dressed appropriately?
Oh, yeah, because I dressed casually, right? I've been told to dress casually. Yeah, yeah.
Well, hang on. So tell me what when you first...
We parked. And then you sort of walked a little way in. And then people were sort of saying, well, there's a rat and stuff. And then they pull out their guns and away they'd go. Just shooting. Yeah.
And did you get your own gun, though? Or you just
no,
followed
him?
No,
I didn't have a gun. And he didn't have one either. So, in fact, I felt like we were not... Like, I'd been invited out. It was a surprise. We went to the tip. And then I realized, in fact, he really wasn't with the in crowd because they did have guns. And we didn't. So we were just observers.
So you were just following other people shooting?
Yes. Right. Yes, that's right.
Did it smell?
Well, it was winter. I remember that. So, and I don't remember smell. So I think it was just because it was cold. There really wasn't much of an odor. Yeah.
Did you have to watch out for stray bullets?
No. We sort of moved forward. You know, just sort of moved forward.
And what happened to the rats when they were shot?
Nothing. You just shot them.
And left them where they were.
That's right. It was a tip after all, wasn't it?
And were you helpful in spotting rats?
Actually, I did. I became quite keen. Yeah, because, you know, you're part of it. You want to get into it. So I did the best I could. It went on quite a long time because I remember getting cold and thinking I've had enough of this. But I was young, you know, and I thought I was like it was a date. And it packed in when it dusk came because it was winter and then it became dusk and it was hard to see the rats because it was not, they didn't use lights or anything like that. You know, maybe car headlights, but by that time you just gave it away. Yeah.
And how did it work as a date exactly? Like,
well, I went with him. So obviously, male, female, out in a car, it was a date. Yeah.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Did you go and have a burger or something afterwards?
I think we probably did, yeah.
Too much wine, that's amore.
And then you got dropped home?
Absolutely.
It was a fun night out.
It was a great time. I didn't talk about it a great deal at home, like, where have you been out? I didn't actually say, you know, I've been out to the tip, but...
To play tippy tippy tay, tippy tippy tay, like a guitar and
And then you realised that Brian actually was interested in someone else who was there.
Yes, that's right. But then it really hit home when he took me on another date where they were doing parachuting. And again, get ready, we're going to go, it's casual. And I thought we would be doing parachuting, but in fact, it wasn't. We went to a place where they did the parachuting. And we got there and we went to this little hut and there were people that were going to go up. And again, this girl was there and I thought, well, that's strange, right? And she did go up, but again, Brian and I didn't go up.
So he would take you on a date to go and watch another girl.
That's right. That's right.
That's amore. That's amore.
But this is the same man, this is the same boy, I should say boy, who I went out on a date with, and he said to me, now this is true, could you stand in the gutter please, because I was taller than him.
Lucky fella.
So, you see, you could see that we weren't going anywhere with this.
Sarah Lowe there with a romantic story about her mum's date to the tip. What a lucky lady. You're listening to All the Best. This episode, we're discovering love off the beaten track. Miles Merrill shared this story at All the Best live event, Tales of Sin and Virtue. In an attempt to escape the city, he inadvertently found himself naked on a country road in the middle of Virginia. There is a strong language warning on this story.
I was a smoker and I got glandular fever. And every time I had a cigarette, coffee or alcohol, my tonsils became golf balls. And this sort of was good, you know, for about 6 months. I stopped everything. I went back to the coffee and the alcohol, but this story goes back to a time when I loved Camel cigarettes. This is not an ad or anything for Camel, but I was in New York with my girlfriend, and we were driving out of New York down to New Orleans, but we were only a couple of hours out of New York in Virginia. And I rolled the window down just a crack. It was winter. And I lit up a cigarette, and my partner, Maya, she rolls her window down all the way. And I said, you know, if you do that, all the smoke's gonna go your way. Better to just leave the crack. That's like an exhaust. It's going to suck all the smoke out. And she rolls her window up and she says, you know, eventually your smoking is going to be a problem in our relationship. And I said, well, it's not now. Anyway, and I kept smoking my cigarette, right? And she said, well, what if, like, hypothetically, I said it's either me or cigarettes? Well, you would never say that, so I don't have to think about it. And she said, no, but just imagine, like if you had to make the choice, me or cigarettes. Well, I'd choose you, of course. Well, why don't you? Well, I kept smoking that cigarette, but I was thinking about my mother and my sister and my friends, and I was thinking, who would I give up? Like, would I give up what member of my family? Would I give up my mother? And then I realized that I was having a hard time running upstairs, and that actually I wasn't very healthy anymore, and I wasn't as invincible as I thought I was going to be, and that maybe I was giving up everybody. And I had this epiphany where I just, like, finished the cigarette that I was smoking and rolled down the threw it out the window, polluted, of course, but then grabbed the whole pack, like, I think there was 10 cigarettes left, crumpled them up, threw them out the window, and I said, we're not going to Memphis tonight. We're not going to a city. I want to go somewhere where there are no people, where there's no bar, where there's no alcohol, where we can just get away. Let's pull over right now and look at someplace on the map. We're just staying away. I don't want to get drunk. I don't want to do any of that. I want to go somewhere just out in the middle of nowhere. Just, okay, let's have a look. Look at that. Look at that. If we drive another 50 miles and then 20 miles down a dirt road, we could go to a place called Cave Mountain Lake. They've got everything there. They've got everything there. And I was like, let's go. So we drive down this dirt road. We get to this little fire trail type road. We drive another 20 minutes down the fire trail to where it dead ends. And we park up and we're picnicking and it's sunset and we're enjoying ourselves. And we're right there in the middle of the forest. Nobody anywhere, right? Except for us just sitting there, right? Sleeping in the back of the station wagon. It's late. Put our blankets and our little fold-up mattress that we found in the rubbish bin in New York and, you know, a piece of foam. And anyway, out, right? Middle of the night, Maya starts bumping me, right? And I'm like, what? What's going on? She's like, there's somebody out there. What? You're kidding me. This is ridiculous. We drove 20 miles down a dirt road, 20 minutes down a fire. She said, there's nobody out there. There's nobody. She's like, there's somebody just across the path, just over there in a pickup truck. What? So, you know, she's naked on all fours in the back of the station wagon. And so I do the same. We're both naked on all fours in the back of the station wagon. And yes, there is a pickup truck, and there's somebody sitting in the cab of the truck with the light on. And I'm like, what the fuck is this guy doing here? It's the middle of the fucking night. What is going on? And she's like, I don't know. I've been awake for about 15 minutes watching him. What has he been doing? Why didn't you wake me up earlier? And she's like, I don't know. I'm just waiting to see what he does. He opens the door to the pickup truck and backs out of it, pulling a long pipe out of the truck. And I'm looking, going, what has he got? And that's when I realize he's actually got a 12 gauge, I'm guessing. Like, he's got a shotgun. He's got a fucking shotgun. And I'm like, oh! All of our luggage, everything, is in the driver's and passenger seats. We had to take everything out of the back and stick it into the front so that we could go to bed. And so we're whipping stuff, and this guy's just, like, looking at the ground, just kind of wandering about with his gun and getting something out of the back of the pickup truck. And we start throwing all of our sleeping bags and all of our, you know, all the tent and all that backpack and everything and whipping it over our shoulders. I jump into the driver's seat, and I'm like, my keys, they're in my jeans, which are underneath all the stuff that we've just loaded into the back. And we're, like, sifting through all that, trying to find my keys. Finally, she throws the keys. They fall on the floor, and I'm like going onto the floor trying to get the keys. I finally get the keys, and the guy comes running over, and I turn on the headlights, and I start to drive, and he's blocking the car. And he's like, wait, y'all don't need to go. And I roll down the power window on his side, and I'm like, dude, you got a gun. And he's like, y'all don't need to go. I was gonna hunt on this side of the trail. If y'all want to hunt on that side of the trail, I don't care. And that's when I look down at my erection. And I'm like, I'm naked. And he said, what'd you say? I said, you're hunting? And he's like, yeah, you got to get out here before dawn if you want to catch them there. But, you know, it's going to be real busy around here pretty soon. So, you know, I thought I'd get out here early. I thought y'all hunting too? No, we're just trying to get away from people and go camping and just kind of enjoy ourselves. He's like, well, y'all could just drive on back into your spot, and I won't bother you none. And so, you know, we do. We kind of just wrap ourselves back up and think, okay, we're experiencing a little bit of Virginia country life. Isn't this lovely? And so we're lying there, and, you know, about 15 minutes pass. You sleeping? No. You sleeping? No. And we start talking, you know, whatever. And an hour passes. We're still not sleeping. We're just talking, sharing stories, whatever it is. And then we start to hear, and then some radio blaring Bon Jovi somewhere out in the forest, you know, and then it changes to Welcome to the Jungle, Guns N' Roses, and you're just like, welcome to the jungle! And people are just, you know, all around us now with rifles playing bullshit rock and roll in the middle of the forest, and I'm like, my God, I want a fucking cigarette. Thank you.
Personally, thank Miles for bringing Guns N' Roses back into my life again. That was Miles Merrill sharing his story about a road trip in Virginia. Miles Merrill is the director of Word Travels, which hosts the National Poetry Slam. The Word Travels Festival is coming up in October, and it will include a storytelling and poetry bordello co-hosted by All The Best. Check out allthebestradio.com for all the event details and how you can get involved. You're listening to All The Best. I first saw Miles perform with an international artist, Saul Williams, many years ago at the Gaelic Club. Miles is a master of storytelling, poetry and spoken word. And his involvement in the scene in Australia has seen the growth of the Poetry Slam become a national event, encouraging poets from all walks of life to get up and share their stories. But what makes him tick? My hunch said he's a pretty interesting guy. So I went to find out more.
My name is Miles Merrill, and I write and perform monologues, poems, and stories, and run a literary and literacy arts organization. I'm originally from Chicago, and yeah, just lived all over the States as well. I was saving up to go to South America, and I finished the lease on my place, moved in with my mother, and my mother said, there's a girl next door from Australia who's just like living there for a little while, and she's on her way to South America as well. So I baked a plate of brownies and knocked on the door next door. I mean, I started out as an actor when I was in high school, and then so I tried out for a role in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, obviously the stage version, not the film. I started reading for the lead role, and the director stopped me and said, what are you doing? I said, I'm reading for the lead. And he said, well, the lead is not black. Well, it doesn't say that in the script. He goes, well, it's implied. The man's name is Murphy. He's got to be Irish. And I said, well, how does that explain Eddie Murphy? And he said, well, regardless, we've got you down as Janitor 1, Janitor 2, or the Indian guy. And it was devastating to me because I was like, well, the Indian guy has no lines. And like the only black people in this whole play are two janitors. And it's just, you know, kind of an atrocious thing to face. And yeah, I just thought, all these things going on inside of me are never going to come out if I'm just going to wait for, you know, if I'm going to wait for Spike Lee or something, you know, to cast me.
Yet this nightingale, he stays stone. Granted, she is a raven, beaked and black, full of tears and caws. She got shot from the, knocked from the, clipped her ass.
Then in Australia, I got up at an open mic at the Good Bar, which was a club right underneath the Academy Twin Cinema. And the night, I think, was called Brackets and Jam. And they just kind of said, hey, anybody want to get up and say anything? We got like 10 minutes while the next band sets up. And my girlfriend nudged me a little bit and said, just get up and do something from your notebook. And so I did. I just kind of read out this poem thing. And it was fantastic. I guess right after I finished, the entire audience was completely silent. And I just heard someone way in the back of the room go, wow. And I said, you want to hear another one? Yeah! I feel like anybody that is kind of from a more marginalized racial or, you know, ethnic or, I suppose, marginalized community of any sort, you know, you almost have a responsibility to tell your own story, because there just aren't enough outlets for, you know, your life experience being expressed in television or film, even in books. So much is based on commercial sales, and if the majority of the population is kind of white or Anglo kind of thing, then it's very difficult for advertisers to take a chance and, you know, get the word out about someone who's completely different from who their audience is going to be. You know, people want to identify with themselves, basically. Yeah, well, seeing people in regional Australia, you know, a 16-year-old from Dungog who gets up with her poetry in front of an audience for the first time and then gets chosen to go to perform at Sydney Theatre, and then, you know, for every year after is just passionate about writing. And so that, to me, is the most rewarding part of it. Like, I can get applause for my own writing any day of the week, but after a while, you just want something deeper. And to be able to offer an opportunity to, you know, 1,000 poets a year get involved, and to see them grow and change and learn and develop and get excited about their own story is, you know, for me, it's not only riveting to watch, but it's kind of a bubbling up full of butterflies inside of me just going, yes, you know. Well, this year we received funding from Arts New South Wales to expand the Australian Poetry Slam New South Wales and National Final into a 3-day festival of performed writing. So stories and monologues and poems and hip-hop. And so we've turned it into the Word Travels Festival. So we're collaborating with Sydney Opera House, Sydney Theatre, Sydney Harbour Foreshore Authority, and creating this mini festival of writers that perform. You've got people coming in from Indonesia and China and New Zealand just to see and participate and be involved. And language and expression is vital, because it's your signature. It tells people who you are, and it allows you to move forward in life if you've got the ability to communicate. And again, it's for me, it's been a contradiction to otherwise being the victim of being stereotyped.
Night had a nose, of course it would be running from the bridge on down. Night's thick calves would cha-cha-cha holes in your dance floor. Its hair, black fire, under control but still dangerous. Night's face, Venus in the open sky, a mask over back alleys wet with trash, but it's eyes are green, flashing lights saying go, 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 go. Night's body would be heavenly with little needle holes to let the stars shine through. If night were me, I'd kill the sun and never let you go. Beats like a big bass drum, moans like scotch pouring through a saxophone. Night's lips would always be pouting and puckered on some cheap movie star. Its voice a kabillion cars revving with alarm. And I tell you it breathes sweet magnolia breeze. And when morning comes creeping in that back door and all sane people are asleep, there's just me and you playing in the abandoned puddles of dawn. And that's night, isn't it?
That was Miles Merrill sharing his story and poetry. Go to our website to find out more about all the best event at the Word Travels Festival. You won't want to miss it, trust me. That's all we have time for. But thank you to everyone who contributed to this episode, Sarah Lowe, Miles Merrill and Jordana Caputo. All the Best is produced at FBI Radio in Sydney in association with SYN in Melbourne, Radio Adelaide and 4ZZZ in Brisbane. All the Best is played across Australia on the Community Radio Network and is made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. Our production manager is Carly-Anne Keneally. Our executive producers are Jordana Caputo and Belinda Lopez. And I'm Meryn Winchester, the Features Executive Producer. Catch us next week for more homegrown stories from around Australia.